This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And boy, oh boy, do I have two great authors with me today. They are a team. Now, they will not be able to tell us the entire story behind their books, because I think some of it is probably still classified. But I am so happy to welcome today. They write as a team, and they're called Andrews and Wilson. But I have in the studio, I have Jeff Wilson.
That's right.
And I'm so happy to have you here, Jeff.
Thanks. It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Okay. And on the phone, Brian. Brian, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. So we have Brian Andrews. So you guys are both so impressive. I love your books. And we're going to be talking about your Tier 1 thrillers. And then towards the end of the show, you can talk a little bit about your other books that you write individually. But let's talk about these fantastic Tier 1 books. Why don't you introduce yourselves? Because I think you can do it better. Do you want who wants to start?
Let's let Brian go first.
Oh.
He's way more impressive.
Okay.
I'll just sort of tail in.
Okay, Brian. So tell us about yourself, and then we'll talk about the books.
Sure. I'm a U.S. Navy veteran. I served in the submarine community, so I was a submarine officer, and stationed out in the Pacific Fleet, driving around on what's called a fast attack submarine. So there's really two types. You've got your boomers, which are the really big ones, the ballistic missile submarines, and then the fast attacks, which kind of are a multi-mission platform. And after that, after I left the Navy, I did some entrepreneurial stuff, and then got into writing because it was always a passion of mine. And I met Jeff at a writers' conference that happens annually in New York called the International Thriller Writers Conference. It's just this fantastic gathering of authors who write thrillers and military guys. It seems like we always sort of run into each other, even when we don't intend to. And that's where we met, and sort of everything happened from there. So I'll turn over to Jeff to maybe tell that story after he introduces himself.
Yeah, so I'll fact check him that everything he said was true for a change. So that was right. I'm Jeff. Brian and I have become fast friends. He's definitely one of my best friends in the world. As he said, we met at a writer's conference and gravitated towards each other because we were both military men. In fact, when you go to Thriller Fest, you can usually see this little group over in the corner. And it's, you know, Tony Tate is over there, and I'm there, and Brad Taylor. All the military guys kind of hang out together. Tom Young is always there. But anyway, I'm also a Navy veteran. My background is maybe slightly more diverse. My mom says I can't hold a job, but I've done a number of things. I've been a pilot. I've been a firefighter. I've actually even dabbled in acting. By education, I'm a surgeon. I've worked for the government in a number of roles. But my time in the Navy, the 14 years I spent in the Navy, most of it was spent in special warfare. So as a surgeon, I was attached to a SEAL team out of the East Coast and supported their operations. And then Brian and I met, and he asked if I thought we could write a book together. We both had standalones that we'd written. We met as debut authors. And, you know, he's an impressive guy. So, of course, I immediately said, no way I would ever write a book with somebody. What would that look like? How could you do that? So he had this idea for – it was a germ of an idea, wouldn't you agree, Brian, at first. He just wanted to do a book with – a SEAL who was now delving into the blacker world of covert operations. And he had sort of a vague idea. And he said, but I want someone that's been in the community, because his books before that are always based on realism. And I said, it's a great book idea. I just can't see how you could write together. It just doesn't make sense to me. So we went back and forth. He asked me two or three times, and I usually said no, but we started brainstorming the book. I was like, look, you're a friend. I'll help you. Like, let's talk about what you want to do. And so we brainstormed the book. So, and I know now, looking back, this was all part of his master evil plan to wear me down. But so by the time we got to that point, the book was starting to develop, and it was like an awesome book, and I was so excited about it. I was like, man, I wish that was my book. And he said, look, let's do this. He's definitely the pragmatic one in our partnership. He said, let's do this. Let's write 5 chapters, and if it's going well, we'll continue on, and if it's not, you can keep the book. And I was like, wow. So I'm thinking, I just scored a book, right? Great book idea. So we started writing. We wrote 5 chapters. How long do you think to write the first 5 chapters, Brian? Like 10 days, like 2 weeks? Like, we'd been talking about it for so long, it just sort of spilled out of us. We wrote the entire rough draft of the manuscript in about 3.5 months. And ever since then, we write together now. Now I'm just Wilson and Andrews and Wilson. I'm nobody now.
So whose idea was John Dempsey? Tell John us about Dempsey. John.
Yeah, so.
Well, John is, he's not one person, right? I would say that John is sort of a mixture of some of the brave and courageous, fantastic individuals that Jeff and I both serve with. He sort of represents the type of man that, you know, epitomizes someone doing covert operations and special warfare. I think there's certain elements of people that we know. John, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what we tried to do with all the characters, but Dempsey in particular. He was the seed character, right? The original character that we built the series around, even when we were just brainstorming it over cocktails. And that's what we agreed on from the very beginning. We want John Dempsey to be sort of an everyman type character, because that's what the guys in that community are. So we didn't want him to be a superhero. We didn't want it to be like some of the films and TV and even books that you see about these characters where they're these indestructible supermen, because the men that I worked with weren't like that at all. They were just ordinary men who do something extraordinary. So they have an unbelievable, absolutely extraordinary drive to do this important, dangerous thing. But then they come home and they take the garbage to the curb and they pick up milk on the way home and they watch their kids play softball. And I mean, they're just such amazingly ordinary people when they're not downrange. And so that was what we agreed on. We wanted to do that. But I think that you would have to agree that, wouldn't you, Brian, that he's an amalgam of certain people we know for sure. I mean, I know some of my friends will read the book and go, oh, in that part, I think he's talking,
that's me.
He's talking yeah. about me, right? Yeah. So,
In all the parts where he's described as sexy, or
yeah. Well, if you've been to our website, you know that's Brian.
Yeah. Obviously. Now, Brian, what does Tier One mean? Where did the title for the series come from?
It comes from sort of I wouldn't say it's an official term, but it's definitely the label that gets used to refer to the most elite units in special operations. So, obviously, all Navy SEALs are elite, but there's a particular group within the SEALs, so SEALs within the SEALs that operate and are sort of doing the most advanced missions or the most technically difficult missions, and sort of the same exists with other branches of the service. And even there's, you know, elite operators inside the FBI, the hostage rescue team. You could call them like a Tier One type of unit. And I'd say Jeff probably could expand on that a little bit too.
Yeah, so the Tier One units are within special operations, not in the Navy, but in SOCOM in general. The Tier 1 units are the units that fall under the Joint Special Operations Command. So the JSOC units, the SEAL team that falls under that unit, the Delta Force that falls under that unit, 160th from the Army that provides air support, those are the Tier 1 units. And so they are the units that are tasked for short fuse, quick operations, denied territories, covert, you know, black operations kind of stuff are considered the Tier 1 units. And so when we used the title Tier One in the first book and for the title of the series, the idea was, in the evolving landscape of covert operations, Tier One starts to mean something that it didn't originally mean. And so this organization, the Ember organization that we created for our novels, is the new face of the Tier One operator. It's not the SEAL teams versus Delta. It's a very joint interagency, black, no affiliation type of unit, which our premise is that's the face of the future Tier 1.
Okay, well, anybody who knows me knows I love military books. It doesn't matter. I'm all the way, you know, to the past. I love Roman history. I love Greek history. I love all European history. And then when it comes to modern history, to read these books, I think it's so wonderful, actually, a wonderful way to learn about what's going on in the world. When you're reading a book like your Tier 1 series, they're thrillers, and so you're getting all the military and the thrilling part, you know, that you, it just keeps you turning the pages, because I love action. And I actually, you know, I love when you actually get into details about weapons, and I just enjoy it. I'll click on it, and I'll say, I want to see what they're talking about, because it's just fun. It sort of expands your mind. So I love when you write about weapons, actually. And then, of course, let's talk about so your first book was Crusader 1, and tell us the premise for that one, and then we'll talk about I was just telling Jeff here that I've read the books on Kindle, but I then got Shadow War on Audible, and I really enjoy that on Audible, and because again there's action and it's boom boom, and I it's fun. But tell us about the first book, and then we'll go on.
Well, the first book actually was in the series is called Tier 1. So Tier 1 is the first book. War Shadows is the second. Crusader 1 is the third that came out 6 months ago. Tier 1 sort of sets the stage. I'm going to let Brian give you some of the details. But the idea of Tier 1, and this is always a challenge in a book that you know is a series, is you want to set the stage and give some backstory and give some background of where these characters are going and how they know each other. But a book about that would bore you to sleep. And so you have to set it in a very action-packed, you know, way, especially in a thriller, obviously. And so that was the challenge with Tier 1. We had a whole lot of stuff to build to propel the series forward, but we needed to do it in a book that would stand alone as an exciting book. So I'll let Brian tell you a little bit more detail about, you know, that plot. But to me, that was sort of the challenge of that book, was to push it all into the space so that we could run in all these directions with the other books without boring you to death, right?
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that Jeff and I started out with when we talked about the series is that in the genre, in the thriller genre, you know, novels are set up that you have to have a bad guy and he has to have a plot to do something nefarious, and the hero has to stop that plot, and it gets wrapped up in a nice tidy bow. And then if it's a series, the next book, the hero takes on a new villain and then a new villain, and it just sort of goes like that. And that's satisfying in one sense, because you can finish the book and say, wow, okay, the hero won, the bad guy lost, and you feel good about it. But in the real world, it doesn't always work out that way. You can see that, you know, out there in the world right now, we have some regimes that have hung around for a long time. So you have bad guys doing things for decades in different parts of the world. And so sometimes, you know, in real life, our heroes get the bad guys. Sometimes it can take a long time, and they're on different operations, taking down elements of the bad guy's operation, or they have a new threat that pops up, they have to take on that. And so we sort of wanted to bring this realism to the series. And so what we decided to do was not only have a longitudinal series with our heroes, we wanted to have a longitudinal series with our villains. So with the first book, Tier 1, you get introduced to the Persian threat, which is there's a CIA equivalent operating in Iran called VVAC, and they do special operations and they have their own agenda. And so that's sort of the foil for our hero Dempsey and his organization. And instead of building this entire organization up and having them wiped out in the first book, which is unrealistic, what we did is we decided to write a trilogy about that organization. So those first three books that Jeff mentioned, Tier 1, War Shadows, and Crusader 1, they're all focused on this particular entity, VVAC, and their plans and how it affects U.S. operations and our partners in the Middle East.
And you certainly won't run out of bad guys there.
All right.
And they are, I think, this is a great time for people to read your books because there are things happening in the Middle East that are certainly reflected in the book and your analysis of the situation of the different attitudes between the different peoples and the different groups. It's all very complex, but it's much easier to understand when you actually read it, you know, in a thriller because you're looking at it from a different point of view. It's not just facts. Really, first of all, you really care about the characters. I thought that you do a great job in both depicting the bad guys and the good people that are there. And that, you know, right now we're facing, I've had a lot of interest in my life in Iran and what's going to happen there. And I think for all of the world, we're hoping that there will be a change for the better. Because there's a lot of potential. Well, there's a lot of potential in the Middle East if things could straighten out, right?
Sure, sure. And that's why you write the books that way. I think that's a good point. Like we definitely want to bring awareness of what's going on. Our books are fiction. They're pulp fiction. They're designed to entertain. We don't have a delusion that we're changing the world with our novels. But we do want to bring a realistic view of the world through our novels. We want our brothers and sisters that are still serving to say, yeah, that's exactly what's going on, or yeah, that's how I would handle that situation. And you can do that best when you write good characters that give a visceral response to the readers. And I think as Brian was pointing out, if you only write a compassionate view of your good guys, then you're going to fail because you got to have the bad guys have a point of view. They have to have a motivation. They can't just be, you know, the dark evil guy petting a cat in a corner. I mean, it's got to be, they are the good guys from their point of view. And if you don't paint that, then your entertaining fiction won't be as good, but also you're never going to give the awareness that you're talking about. People won't understand the complexity of the problems if you just make the evil people the boogeyman.
Yeah.
You have to have them feel things and have their own motivations and their own families like we did in Tier 1 and in War Shadows. And if you don't do that, then you've taught people nothing and you've also not entertained them as well.
Exactly. Now, both of you were writers, you know, you were already writing and you were involved in writing from... Were you involved in writing from a young age, Jeff?
I was. So I've done as I pointed out through my mom's perspective, I've done a lot of different things. The one thread in my whole life that pulls through everything, other than my faith, is writing. And that writing has always been there. I started writing little short stories when I was 10 or 11. I published my first short story when I was 14. Any other job I've had, I always... in my free time was hammering away and putting out short stories, publishing a few. So it's been a theme of my whole life and now of course I have the opportunity to take all those other life experiences and put them into the work. And it's really satisfying to do that.
Well, now, I'm going to have to take a commercial break in a minute, but because it was just Father's Day and because we've been talking about, Brian, I've been talking to Jeff about his father, who is called Buzz, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Jeff mentioned to you that I've been doing a project called the F-105 Warriors, Forgotten F-105 Warriors, because I love the Air Force. I love the thud pilots who have been forgotten. And so I wanted to, since Jeff's dad flew a thud, I want to play a special song for him and for a little late Father's Day gift before we go to commercial break.
Cool.
I'm a pilot. I love my plane. It is my body. I am its brain. My Thunder Chief loves me. And I love her too. But I get the creeps with only one seat and one engine too. She's faster than lightning. It says on her dials to get a thud airborne takes only 2 miles. She's packed with transistors, black boxes, diodes, but stay alert, 'cause you might get hurt when she explodes. She totes more bombs than a B-17. My F-105 has a gun and she's mean, but there is one thing that curdles my blood. It's lonesome up there alone in the air in my single seat thud. I love my thud and she loves me too, but she soaks up flak like a magnet can do. If I get my 100 and I'm still alive, I'll have no grief. Goodbye, Thunder Chief, my F-105.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my super duo writing team of Andrews and Wilson, who are the authors of a wonderful series called The Tier One Thrillers. And I'm so happy to have in the studio, I have with me Jeff Wilson, and on the phone, Brian Andrews. Okay, Brian, you're still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, great. Well, I hope you enjoyed the thud song. And, you know,
it was great.
I always, around 4th of July, I always want to make sure I take time to thank every vet and all of our military for their service. And so it was a real honor for me to be able to honor Jeff's father, because I love Thud Pilots, and I listen to this song every morning. It puts me in a good mood. It's one of my playlist. It's like number three. I listen to it every day because I want to be inspired to continue honoring our veterans and make sure that none of them are forgotten.
Amen. Amen to that.
Okay.
What a great song. You got to admire those guys that are willing to go up every day in a slow-moving Target, basically. So
exactly. And we're reading your books and we see so many things, the details of war, the horrors of war. And then we think if people could just understand each other, it would be really great if we could end this nonsense, because there are great people out there. There are great people in Iran. And I'm hoping that that at some point we'll see a whole different world because many people, the younger generation don't understand that at one time we were friends with Iran. Right. We worked with Iran. And so there's possibilities in the future, but it comes through understanding. And so that's why I think your books are very important.
Well, thank you for saying that. It does come from understanding, but unfortunately in the world, the reality is it comes through understanding and strength.
You can't
just say, please be nice, and really think that's going to work anymore. I think those days are long, long behind us.
Exactly. Now, Brian, when your background, where does your background come into the stories?
It's his ginormous brain. I'll just answer, give you a little preface to his answer. He's a nuke guy, so he has a ginormous brain. That's what he brings to the table.
Okay. So what do you have to say about that?
Thank you, Jeff. I like you. Before I was went the nuclear path, I was a psychology major at Vanderbilt, and I was always very interested in how the brain worked, so I did some research on how pictures and words were represented in memory, and I'm just fascinated by how people think, psychology, philosophy, and I just like learning about interesting things. So, nuclear power, military tactics, those are just another complex system to try to figure out. Some of the other books that Jeff and I have written, you can see with Jeff's background, all these things that he does. Being a surgeon, having been a pilot, his diverse background. I think the common thread there is just that we're both curious souls. So we have an interest in learning about new technologies, advancements in science, and how those things impact the human condition, and how they impact social structures. And that's what we try to bring to all the books that we write, is not just a one-dimensional perspective. We try to bring in all the different things that are happening in the world today and the complexity and how those affect people's relationships. And if you've read the last book, we talk a lot about relationships between our partners. The Crusader One is set in, the majority of the book is set in Israel, so we bring in differences between how the Israelis face their constant threat and prosecute counterterrorism versus America. And so I think it's that curiosity for other cultures, technology, and how the world changes that sort of drives me to want to be a storyteller.
Well, I've just been listening to War Shadows in the Audible version, and I've been enjoying that. And one of the things that, again, sometimes, when we're talking about thrillers, this isn't just about the Middle East, because it's strange how many people don't understand that these things are coming to this side of the world.
Right, that's right, and that's why in War Shadows we wanted to bring that out. We're not trying to be political. We're not trying to talk about how we should manage the border and all that. But we do want to share the reality with people in these books. And so that in War Shadows, as you alluded to, we have terrorists working with narco-terrorists in South and Central America and using our porous southern border as a way to bring badness into the continental United States. And you can have political discussions, and we'll leave that for the big brain political people to have. But if you're not aware of the problem, then you're never going to solve it. And so we do try to bring those sort of elements in. And it's interesting that you talk about how it's easy to just focus on the jihadi threat, because we've all been so ingrained in it for so many years. As you know, our fourth book is coming out in November, American Operator. And we're super excited about it because it's a pivot. For us, it's a pivot away from the jihadi terrorists and some of the puppet masters like Vivek in Iran that sometimes are more involved than we think. And we've pivoted away from that to the emerging threat through Russia and some of the other things. And so we're trying to be broad-minded and share that with our readers. Look, it's not just about the jihadist who wants to blow himself up in a bus station. There's geopolitical forces that are foes of America, too, and we want to make sure that we're bringing all of that out.
Well, that's why I think I enjoy your book so much, because you do bring in facts, and there are a lot of information there, and you bring it in a way so that people can understand it and start to get this feeling that there are these geopolitical events happening, and we really have to be able to understand it, and not just, you know, this the fluff news that we get. There's depth here in your books, and it's important depth.
Well, we hope so. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, and I appreciate that you recognize that. And I just want to, you know, piggyback on one thing that Jeff said, which is I want to make it very clear to people that, you know, for us, the Tier 1 series, it is not a platform for us to stump our individual political views. Like, nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, we take great care to try to write books with political elements and political problems without taking a partisan view. And I think what's nice is a lot of times Jeff and I like when we see reviews from people that recognize that. They'll say, you know, this is a great book, but it's not these guys just trying to stump for the right or stump for the left, because especially when you're serving in the military, you need to divorce partisanism from your ability to do your job, right? So, yes, politics are involved, but they don't have to be partisan. Every decision that's made doesn't have to serve an agenda for one side or the other. And I think that's important to realize, that the men and women serving in our military and intelligence community, I think maybe it's becoming increasingly difficult for them to try to do that. And it's something that people need to try to appreciate and understand, that they take great effort to do that.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. We do make an effort to do that. And it's, it's sometimes the issues, we do have strong political opinions, sometimes the same, sometimes not exactly the same. And we make an effort to divorce that from the book, not just for a business reason. Obviously, we don't want to make half our readers not want to read us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not just that. It's exactly what Brian said. It's like bringing a level of understanding of what goes into the mind of a warrior. You know, we have people in the JSOC teams who have served under Bush and Obama and now Trump, and they just continue to serve and continue to go downrange and continue to execute the American policy regardless of who's in the political power this month. And that's a challenge for everybody. You know, I've been there, Brian's been there. And so we try to reflect that in the book. That's one of the creative reasons why we do it. Obviously, there is a business reason, but the creative reason is, look, that's the reality. You can't have all this partisan politics when you're generating an op board to go on a mission. It can't be, how will this help this party or that party? It has to be, what's the mission objective, and how can I stop these bad guys from hurting my country, period. And so that's what we work so hard to put into the books.
Now, one of the things, of course, your books feel very realistic, and now you've been out, not active military for a while, but I have a feeling that you have your fingers in with some active duty people who are giving you ideas, right?
What can I talk about here? So
let's not say anything we can't say.
I continue to be involved in the communities in a variety of ways. But also we do have, both of us have friends that are still in the communities that we can talk to and chat with. But
and you better write something realistic, or
they'll sure let us know. That's for sure. That's the nightmare, right? Is we write something and we get some bad phone calls like, are you crazy? But I think every writer does that, though. You put your personal experience in. You sometimes have to extrapolate your personal experience, obviously, depending on what your background is. But I think every writer does that to some extent, and certainly the same is true for us. There's a lot of our personal relationships and our personal experiences in the books.
So, Brian, when you're writing, who writes what? Did you write Who's the first one who writes something and then sends it to the other person like that? Do you do it that way?
No, it's a great question. So Jeff and I like to talk about this subject because we've been on a number of panels with other co-author teams, and it's amazing because every set of co-authors that we've met, they all have a different method. And what we always say is, well, their method wouldn't work for us, but probably our method certainly wouldn't work for them. The way that Jeff and I tackle the project is that when we're setting out to start a new book, then we spend a pretty good amount of time just on the telephone brainstorming, talking about sort of the goals for the book, the general plot line, you know, what are the characters that we want to introduce, and sort of what are their demons, what are their strengths and weaknesses, and we get this, like Jeff used the word earlier, this germ of idea for a book, and we just start expanding that. And once we feel comfortable with sort of what the point of the book is and what the general story arc is going to be, then we'll divide the book into the early chapters. We'll sort of divide them up based on point of view. So, as you know, we write third-person, multi-character point of view novels, which is great. So we can assign particular chapters based on point of view, and we start going that way. And then we merge the chapters together. It doesn't mean that I'm writing one point of view for the entire book or Jeff's writing one point of view for the entire book. Often we'll change, but at least it gets each of us in that particular character's head. We get to know them for a while before we switch, and then we read the other guy's work and get to know that character and try to carry that thread through the end of the book.
Yeah, I think, you know, I had coffee with another writer, a friend of mine, William Miller, who writes the Nobleman series this morning. And he actually gave me what I consider the greatest compliment for a co-authoring team, which is that as he reads through our books, he never can see where's Brian and where's Jeff. He said, it just seems seamless the way you blend it. And he had assumed that that meant one of us wrote the first draft and the other one was more like an editor that did the rewrites. And that's not the case. As Brian said, I'll write like chapter 2, 5, 7, and 9, and he writes the others, and then we exchange them. But I think that the reason that we're able to blend them, I hope as seamlessly as William was telling me, is because both of us have our hands on every word that's in the book. And Brian had said we sometimes will split by point of view, and we frequently do that, but never exclusively. So I always can sense when it's time that, you know, okay, I've been writing John Dempsey for the last 4 or 5 chapters. I really need Brian to write a couple of them to make it fresh again, but also so that his hand is in there and vice versa. And then we frequently will exchange those chapters. So we don't wait till the end. Every, what would you say, Brian, 5 or 6 chapters, maybe something like that. Every handful of chapters, 5 or 6 chapters, everything I've written, I'll send to him and he'll send back. And we then do the rewrites. And the reason that that works for us, that's the part, by the way, when we are on panels that all the other writers look at us and make a funny thing. Well, that could never work. That's ridiculous. And I was like, well, but and here's the series that's doing well. The reason it works for us, I think, is because we were able to have very frank discussions at the beginning about what we bring to the table individually. What we have to be introspective and say, look, here's where you're better than I am. Like, this is my weakness, and thank goodness that that's your strength. And we mesh together very well in that regard. So when I send my stuff to Brian, before he reads it, he already knows what he's going to have to do to bring it to the next level, and vice versa. When he sends me his stuff, it's always the same kind of stuff that I'm doing in my rewrites. And so it sounds like something you just say in an interview because it sounds cool, but it is the truth that when we're done, there's no sense of ownership of anything in any of these books. When people will ask us in an interview, whose idea was this or who wrote that? We can't tell you because I swear to you, we really, literally don't know. It just feels like our book. It's Andrews and Wilson book. I can't, with rare exceptions, can I tell you who had that idea or who wrote the first version of that. It just, we did it together. And that's what makes it blend, I think.
Well, you know, I read a lot. And I have this wonderful ability. First of all, I notice style. I can pick up a book, I'm reading it, and I say, okay, I know that author read a lot of F. Scott Fitzgerald. I just can see it in the sentencing, or you know, I recognize these things. And so the word seamless with your books is actually perfect, because I, as I'm reading the books, I'm saying, I didn't feel like two separate people were writing the book. I felt exactly like, boy, they are like in sync. That's like, woo, just moving it along.
And that's part of it too, to be honest. Brian and I have truly become best friends. And I think that to do this, you have to, Brian, we were talking about this just the other day on the phone, in fact. I think when people ask us, you know, what, if I'm going to write with someone, what should I look for? What are some warning things that maybe I should avoid or whatever? We just were talking about it the other day and decided that you either have to be business partners, and that's pretty much your relationship, or you have to be the best of friends. But if you're in that middle area, I think it would be a lot of conflict, because there's going to be ego, there's going to be ownership, there's going to be those things. If you're really, really close friends and you have undying respect for each other and your goal is for the other person's success as much or more as, than yours, then it's easy. Or if it's just business, then you can not worry about hurting people's feelings. In the middle, I think it would be a struggle, at least the way we write. I mean, there's other models, obviously, but.
So, Brian, do you find that by working together, you each individually sort of improve, too, as you go along, that you learn from each other?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, we it's funny that you asked that question, because we were just talking about it 2 days ago. We were having a, we're working on a standalone book right now that's challenging and a little bit outside our previous wheelhouse, but we're having a great time on it. And we just said, you know, we couldn't, neither one of us could have thought of all these ideas. We couldn't have written the characters and told the story as well by ourselves. And quite frankly, you know, we don't, most of the time, I mean, when you're writing by yourself, if you get stuck, you're stuck, you know, but and it's kind of a lonely endeavor. And that's, I think, why we really enjoy co-authoring, because it's like you have this partner, this friend, this, you know, workout buddy. Like, to use an analogy, like going to the gym by yourself is a slog. But when you're doing it as a team, it's energizing and fun. And so for us, you know, it's one of the most, it's the best part of my day. You know, I wake up and I'm excited to call Jeff and say, all right, here's what I thought about. What do you think of this idea? And he'll say, oh, that's a great idea, but what if we tweaked it like this? Had you thought about this? Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about that. And then that makes me think of another twist, you know. And so then you get this momentum that starts to build, and these new ideas in the book starts going in a different direction. And ultimately what happens is, like Jeff said, the sense of ownership changes from, okay, well, this is my idea, to this is our idea. And we ultimately, we just want to tell the most entertaining, interesting story that we can. And that just comes from iteration. And so we rewrite and we iterate and we rewrite, and we don't worry about that, because what we want is a great finished product. It doesn't really matter, like Jeff said, it doesn't matter, well, okay, you thought of this idea or this piece of dialogue or whatever. Maybe it was great when you wrote it, but maybe now we went a different direction and we have to delete it. That's okay. It doesn't matter, because all you ultimately care about is that the finished product is the best finished product that the two of us can put together.
Now, Brian, are you like Jeff? Were you writing from a young age?
No, I started to get the interest in it, I think, while I was in the military. You know, Jeff has this great saying. He says, you know, in the military you have these long periods of boredom punctuated by moments of abject terror. And I think that especially when you're out waiting for, you're on your mission, you're waiting for something to happen or waiting for the next engagement, you do have these down periods. And during those periods, I, you know, to sort of stave off the boredom, I would tell stories to, you know, the guys. And, you know, just a couple of the guys said to me, hey, you know, you're a pretty good storyteller. Have you ever thought about writing a book? And I said, no, I hadn't thought about that. But then, of course, they put that idea in my head. And so then after I got out of the military, it sort of stuck with me. And I thought, okay, well, I would like to try to tell stories. I think being a storyteller is, like, fundamental. It's like the cornerstone of what it means to be a human. I mean, it's what we've done since the beginning of time is we pass information, we pass experience, and we develop empathy and understanding through storytelling. And so I wanted to tap into that. And just like you're reading War Shadows or you're listening to War Shadows now in the audio version, I'm a big Audible fan, and I've had an account even before I was an author, and I just love consuming novels, having them told to me. And so just I want to second, you know, or echo what you said, which you're loving listening to War Shadows, and that's in large part just due to the fact that Jeff and I think when we write these novels, we write them with the idea that the story can be told, and then we went out and found a great narrator named Ray Porter, who's just tops in the business, and he just brings all these characters to life. And it's so fun to listen to Ray tell these stories, because we say, yeah, that's exactly what Jarvis would sound like, or that's exactly how Dempsey would feel and in that situation.
I think Ray Porter's doing a great job. I really, I'm so enjoying the Audible version. He's got a great voice.
You know, we're pretty sure that our Audible version makes, each time a book comes out, makes it to the bestseller list faster than the others, than the print version or the Kindle. And we know that the reason is there are Ray Porter fans. Like, it doesn't matter who wrote the book. They want Wilson. They're looking for Porter's next book, right?
To tell the story.
Yeah, he's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. Now, Brian, I want to ask you one question. Now, about submarines. What was the longest you were in a submarine underwater?
Yeah, I was underwater for over 100 days. We typically do these 6-month deployments, and usually it varies, but when I was doing them, we would usually have two long engagements separated by a break to do, some repair. You come into port, people get a break, and you do repairs. Well, we had one particular mission that was going pretty well, and there were some interesting things happening, so we got extended, and we ended up being on station over 100 days. And by the end of that, I mean, there was virtually no food left on the boat, and it was crazy to think. I had brought a bunch of cans of tuna, just to have some protein, and by the end, I saved them, I hoarded them to the end. And sharing the tuna fish with people who were so low on food.
I've always thought that you submarine have to be a little bit crazy, because I mean I really admire you guys, but I think it's absolutely insane. I was in Disney World, and they have that little pretend submarine. You go in, they close the hatch, and they blow.
Oh, right, I remember
and
that.
I went ballistic. I mean, I was ready to kill everybody on board until they got there. And I've never actually talked to somebody who was in a submarine for 100 days. I admire you.
No, thanks. No, you have to sort of put it out of your mind that, you have to just pretend that you're in a building. I'm just in a building. It's like being inside voluntarily. The only difference with the submarine is that you just don't have the option to go outside, okay? You have to tell yourself that.
I think it makes you very special in my mind, very special. Now, you guys have a website. Do you want to tell who wants to tell about the website?
Yeah, it's www.andrews-wilson.com, and that's where you can find pretty much everything Andrews and Wilson. Obviously, all the Tier 1 books. We've also co-authored books under the pseudonym Alex Ryan, the Beijing Red and Hong Kong Black books. So information about those. Our individual books. Brian just released an awesome book that's not at all Tier 1. It's a really cool sci-fi book called Reset. Information on that book. But most importantly, you can connect with us there. So we have ways that you can send us emails, and we actually do reply to those. We have a newsletter people can sign up for. So andrews-wilson.com is the place to go.
Okay. And it is wonderful. I think that you like to hear from people with comments about your book?
Most of them.
Most. Okay. Well, I know some very very famous writer got a one star from a review on Amazon. Now, this guy gets 5 stars all the time. I mean, it's so he gets this one person sends him a 1 star because of typos in the book. And I think, oh, please, you know, be nice. Right. But I think that particularly I found, as I said, I loved all the background information about weapons. I think you did a great job on that. And I would think that if you get it wrong, people would send you.
Yeah. There's been a few minor things, and most of them were things that we're like both intimately familiar with. So it was somewhere in the editorial process, something got moved around. But yeah, people are quick to point that out. But most of our readers are very gracious when they do that. So, you know, we've had professional aviators from the special operations community point out little things we did wrong with a certain helicopter or whatever, but they're always very gracious.
I want to talk about helicopters for a minute. I tell you, you guys, that in Shadow of War, that helicopter scene is one of the best. I love that, the Russian helicopter. You have to read that book just for that scene. Fantastic. And so, guys, I want to thank you so much for being on today. And the team is called Andrews and Wilson. And it's andrews-wilson.com. So you can get that. And you just also wherever books are sold. And I'm sure at Barnes & Noble and some of the independent bookstores, I hope, are carrying your books. Because the books are exciting in and of themselves, but they also offer an education in world politics at this time. And it's so you're doing, I think, something wonderful here and contributing to.
Well, thank you.
So
thanks so much for having us on. We had a delightful interview.
Well, I'm going to have some special sci-fi week coming up, and so perhaps you would like to come back on and talk about sci-fi, because I love sci-fi, and I'm going to have some more authors on to do sci-fi. Would you like to do that, Brian?
I would be honored. That'd be wonderful.
Okay.
She asked you on air, like, what are you going to say?
Yeah, but as I said, I'm a big sci-fi enthusiast, and so I would love to have you back on to talk about that. So again,
well, Ray Porter read Reset, so you can be excited.
There you go.
Okay. Well, I will do that. And again, you know, I want to thank you for your service in the military. 4th of July is coming up. That's a big weekend for both of you.
Yep. And we just my last plug. Please go to SEALLegacy.org. If you, as 4th of July comes and you're feeling particularly patriotic, you want to support an organization, SEALLegacy.org. That's a great foundation that we support.
Oh, that's fantastic. Absolutely. SEALLegacy.com. A great thing to do over this long, you know, weekend coming up, and to honor our vets. And, wow, it's been an amazing interview. I've really enjoyed talking to you both, and I want to thank you for your books and thank you for your service. And everybody out there, remember that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. And both, you know, Andrews and Wilson can tell you about that. It is a joy, right?
It is, absolutely.
A real joy. And so, again, Brian, thank you. And Jeff, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Our pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Everybody, have a wonderful, safe, and beautiful weekend. Bye-bye.